has just opened at the Tate Modern in London. The federal court is due to hand down a decision in the Australian climate case brought to by Torres Strait Islander elders who fear for the future of their home. And German backpacker Carolina Vilga is stable condition in hospital after surviving 11 nights stranded in the Western Australian outback. That and more coming up in the news. A new exhibition of a female Aboriginal artist has just opened at the Tate Modern in London, aiming to push her status to that of Jackson Pollock and Picasso. Born around 1914, Emily Cam Ngawade came to art late in life, producing her first batiks in the 1980s, as well as paintings deeply connected to her culture and ceremonial practices. More than 80 artworks spanning the 19-year career of the artist from the Sandover region north of Alice Springs are on display. Lead curator of the exhibition, Kelly Cole, says Emily Cam Ngawade deserves greater international recognition.
Ngawade's had several solo exhibitions in Australia and in Japan, so she's a name that is very well known in Australia as a major artist. By bringing her works here to the Tate Modern, we are hoping that her name is going to be, you know, synonymous with the European sort of vocabulary. It's going to be Emily Kamaware, Jackson Pollock, you know, all of these Picassos. We're really hoping that we can actually put her on the world scale or the world stage and people will start knowing her works.
The federal court is due to hand down a decision in the Australian climate case brought by the Torres Strait Islander elders who fear the future of their home. Uncle Paul Kabai and Uncle Pabai Pabai are seeking orders which would require the Commonwealth to undertake steps to prevent further harm to their communities. Their home is on the outer islands of Senadkes, Torres Strait, less than 10 kilometres off Papua New Guinea. The elders say their home is already under siege from the impacts of climate change, and they fear the loss of their islands, their culture and their way of life. Queensland's opposition has welcomed the announcement of an inquiry into the CFMEU days after a damning report found the union's state branch had been ruthless in its pursuit of political, industrial and financial power. He says the allegations are shocking and wrongdoers must be stopped. Premier David Christofoli has said the Commission of Inquiry will shine a light on a broken system and a culture of intimidation because it will have the authority to compel witnesses to appear.
This is the most powerful tool we as a government have to ensure that what we have seen comes to an end. The bullying, the intimidation, the standover tactics, the way that women and children have been treated, workers, a drive to push down productivity in this state.
Pro-Palestinian protesters in Melbourne have pledged to continue demonstrating despite a promised crackdown on their rallies. Hundreds have again turned out to march through Melbourne city centre, undeterred by the Victorian government's promises of a strong response to the weekly protests. Following in the footsteps of controversial laws introduced to New South Wales, the Victorian government is drafting legislation to ban protests outside places of worship. Premier Jacinta Allen says her government is considering strengthening anti-vilification laws, an anti-hate task force, and a protest permit system. It also plans to ban demonstrators from wearing face coverings. A national campaign has been launched today, Monday, to raise awareness of meningococcal disease. As the peak season for the illness gets underway, meningococcal disease is a potentially devastating bacterial infection, which can progress rapidly, with some people becoming critically ill within 24 hours. There have been 56 cases reported nationally so far this year, and 18 of them were in New South Wales. German backpacker Carolina Vilga is in stable condition in the hospital after surviving 11 nights stranded in the Western Australian outback. The 26-year-old survived on minimal food and water and was exposed to freezing temperatures before she flagged down a passing motorist on Friday afternoon. Police discovered Ms. Vilga's abandoned van, which had become bogged in a nature reserve 36 kilometres north of the town of Beacon, triggering a large-scale aerial search. Premier Roger Cook says while the young traveller suffered a traumatic ordeal, she is recovering at Fiona Stanley Hospital and is in good spirits.
Extraordinary, extraordinary feat of surviving in the wilds for 11 nights. She has to get over a very difficult physical ordeal. They threw every resource at it, and because of that, they were able to locate her van as quickly as possible.
And in sport, in the Wimbledon men's final, Jannik Sinner has defeated his great young rival Carlos Alcaraz. The win, a rebuttal to his painful loss to Alcaraz at the French Open 5 weeks earlier. This securing him his fourth Grand Slam title. And for the weather, today, Monday, 4th of July, Perth is seeing showers at 17, Broome is sunny at 30, Darwin is sunny at 32, Alice Springs is sunny at 28. Thursday Island is cloudy at 29. Cairns is partly cloudy at 27. And Brisbane is sunny at 24. Newcastle is sunny at 20. And Sydney is sunny at 18. Albury-Wodonga is possible showers at 12. Melbourne showers at 13. Hobart is cloudy at 10. And Adelaide is seeing showers at 14. And that's all for news, sport and weather for NITV Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Today on the program, a conversation with Alison Page as her sculptural work will become a new permanent landmark at Sydney's Circular Quay. And Wani Toshawa is a multidisciplinary spoken word performer, giving us insights in the upcoming show, Garçon. But first, we look at Australia's UNESCO World Heritage Site, Murujuga Cultural Landscape. An ancient Indigenous rock art collection in Western Australia's Pilbara region has been listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Traditional owners travelled to Paris for the decision, where member nations unanimously voted for the inclusion of the Murujuga cultural landscape. The engravings predate anything found in ancient Egypt or the Roman Empire. Among the red rock hills of Murujuga in Western Australia's Pilbara region are a million ancient rock engravings. Some of the engravings date back 50,000 years, making them older than Stonehenge and the pyramids of Giza. The ancient petroglyphs include the oldest known depiction of a human face, as well as engravings of plants, animals, some of which are now extinct. Traditional owners have long campaigned to protect the art, and now their bid for UNESCO World Heritage listing has ended with a triumph in Paris.
I therefore declare the draft decision 47.8B.13 adopted as amended.
UNESCO says their decision recognises that the site represents a masterpiece of human creative genius as a unique testimony to the cultural tradition and, finally, that the site is an outstanding example of cultural or human settlement showing interaction with the environment. Chair of the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation, MAC, Peter Hicks, travelled to Paris for the momentous decision.
Inscribed into the history books is a great outcome for us, the Aboriginal people. It's a nomination led by Aboriginal people, for Aboriginal people, and guided by Aboriginal people. And therefore, it is world's first.
Peter Jeffries is also from the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation, which has led the campaign. He says it's been years in the making.
Has been in motion now for over, you know, two or three decades. And we've lost a lot of our old members, all our old elders along the road, and this is also, you know, in recognition for their, you know, support as well.
But while the corporation's campaign has gone on for decades, it wasn't until 2023 that the Australian government nominated the Murujuga cultural landscape for World Heritage status. Australia's application was referred back to the government in May after UNESCO suggested the state and federal governments needed to do more to address concerns that acid emissions from Woodside's nearby gas project were damaging the engravings. The peninsula in northwest WA near Karratha is home to two gas plants, a fertiliser plant and iron ore and salt export facilities. Environment Minister Senator Murray Watt argued those emission claims were based on inaccuracies, drawing on a report by about 50 scientists who said the emissions showed there was no longer a risk to the engravings.
In the end, what persuaded the committee was both the scientific evidence that was put forward, which disputed some of the claims that were being made, but also the genuine passion from the traditional owners to see this World Heritage listing be secured.
The minister was also in Paris for the announcement, declaring the government was committed to protecting the site now and for future generations.
On behalf of the Australian government, I am honoured to accept this inscription. Australia is thrilled with the committee's decision to inscribe the Murujuga cultural landscape on the World Heritage List. This has been an Indigenous-led nomination, and this victory belongs to the Ngarra Nali, the traditional owners and custodians of Murujuga, whose deep knowledge, cultural leadership and enduring connection to country are at the heart of this inscription.
But concerns about the potential impacts of pollution on the rock art have not gone away with the listing. Australian Conservation Foundation Chief Executive Kelly O'Shaughnessy says the world is watching now Murujuga is a World Heritage Site and has urged the Federal Environment Minister to reject Woodside's provisional gas project extension. Conditions of the approval which relate to emissions from the plant are still being negotiated, and while the 21 member nations unanimously supported the UNESCO listing, they requested Australia continue to research the effects neighbouring industry has on the rock art and report its findings to the UN next year. A Woodside spokesperson has responded in a statement to SBS.
The company has been a proud supporter of the World Heritage nomination and assessment process, and the company looks forward to continuing to work closely with the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation and traditional custodians on the continued protection and management of this globally significant area.
Still, Mother Thunura woman and Murujuga traditional custodian Raylene Cooper says culture and industry cannot coexist, and she remains worried about the long-term impacts of commissions on the rock art. Peter Hicks says the Ngarra Nali people will remain dedicated to protecting the site.
Today, we create our own stories in the stone, but with some care and protection of our culture, like our ancestors have always done for 50,000 years.
That story brought to you by Georgia Mayer and Angelica Waite for SBS News. Produced by Nari Pakai for NITV Radio.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Sydney will be seeing a new piece of public art, a permanent fixture, added to Sydney's circular quay, Bajigama Nangda Wali Walla Walla, Black Woman Rising. Today, we're joined by artist Alison Page. Thanks for yarning with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, can you just tell us, who are you? Where are you from?
Oh, well, I am a Dharawal and Yuin woman. So some of my apical ancestors were camping around Sydney Harbour pre-colonisation, and then a whole lot of other apicals down further south and south coast in New South Wales.
So this work that's going to be now added to Circular Quay, what is it?
Oh, it's really layered in meaning for me, but physically, what it is a 5.5-metre bust of an Aboriginal woman who's emerging out of the water, and it's in bronze. So it's an imposing and very sort of ambitious public art piece, probably my biggest work yet. But what it really is, it's beyond just a bust of a woman, she is part whale and part woman. So she sort of represents to me and to the women that I worked with, the Sydney Coastal Aboriginal Women's Group, kind of an imagining of our ancestral heroes, these larger-than-life beings that occupied the world in the time of the dreaming, that made all of our sacred sites, that left their perpetual energies all around these sacred sites, and they also sort of embedded the land with story and traditional knowledges and lore.
Why is it significant that this sculpture is being placed in Circular Quay?
The starting point for this work, and I think for anyone working on Aboriginal land, is to start with country. So it was about understanding that part of the city and sort of finding country in it. The place where this woman is emerging from the water is actually where the Tank Stream, which was the original freshwater stream that flowed all the way down pretty much Pitt Street, all the way out into Circular Quay. And the original shoreline of Circular Quay was sort of further back into the city than where it is today. So it's kind of right at that meeting of the salt water and the fresh water where this artwork is going. And so the first thing, you know, I think that you do as a designer or an artist, and you're sort of starting with country, is to kind of imagine what life would have been like on the banks of the Tank Stream for millennia. And the Tank Stream, even though this site isn't specifically a women's site, it would have been occupied by a lot of women who would have been sitting around the creek on a daily basis, cooking food, collecting food, looking after the kids. You know, it would have been a real kind of hub. And so to tap into the sort of life and energy of that place and the memory of country, I knew that I wanted to do a work about women and something that would honour our female power, particularly in the context of the contemporary, you know, metropolis that's come along and sort of landed itself with all its layers of concrete and steel on top of our land. And, you know, this work really is about female power, black female power in a white man's world.
So you mentioned just a moment ago that through this development of this artwork, 20 women have gotten together to form like a collective. Can you tell us what is the Sydney Coastal Aboriginal Women's Group?
Yeah, well, I collaborate a lot with this really amazing Aboriginal culture and heritage expert. She's Darawal, and she's Gumbangi, so she has got this really unique identity too, where she's a traditional owner to the Sydney Harbour, as I am, but she also grew up in Redfern. Her name's Rowena Welsh Jarrett. I went to her and I said, okay, we've got this ambitious idea, let's bring this to life. And she sort of came up with this idea of starting the Sydney Coastal Aboriginal Women's Group, which is a group that's made up of roughly 20 women. We sort of get together to kind of talk about our kinship, our bloodlines, our culture and heritage practices. Rowena is going to be showing us cultural sites around the city. And so we went camping out on Cockatoo Island. This was probably 12 months ago now. And we started talking about this artwork. And it became Bajikama Nunda Wuli Wali Wala, Black Women Rising, because we were having these really deep conversations about bronze sculptures. And, you know, we know that that part of the city, Circular Quay, is absolutely kind of littered, really, with statues of white men from history, monuments. They're very colonial in nature. They usually are a scale model, if you like, of mostly men standing on the sandstone plinth, and they are in some sort of historic pose or something like that. And that's about honouring these individuals and events in that are sort of historic events and so on. And, you know, a lot of us don't even know what half of these are. And quite frankly, there are a few sculptures around the city and monuments around the city of these these white men, that would shock you that we actually do commemorate them, to be honest, because of the horrific role that they've played in Australia's true history. That's why, you know, an artwork like this, you know, you have to sort of have that dialogue with community, because there's a lot to talk about. Not only are we talking about our own ontology and our own beliefs about our own ancestral beings, but we're talking about, you know, the material of bronze and how that it's sort of a material that symbolises power because of how it's been used in bronze monuments in the colonial context. But we are sort of, I guess, taking that material of power and saying, okay, the most beautiful part of that is that it's got permanence and that it is about commemorating something that's culturally significant, right? But we want to decolonize it in form and in scale. Like, this is not, when you look at this woman rising from the water, you might think, oh, it's a woman at first, but then you realise that she has the belly of a whale and that her bronze is bubbling. It's almost forming as she's rising from the water, because she is the mixing of the salt water and the fresh water. She is the energy and the essence that lives within Aboriginal women of Sydney today, and she is country.
So it's incredibly strong messaging that we're going to see, and love that it's a public art for everyone to see too. What do you hope people who are tourists, people who are mob, live here, grown here, what do you hope all these kinds of people that may see this in the future will take away from this work?
I think this artwork, and like every great artwork, it'll mean different things to different people. For us, for our mob, for the traditional owners of Sydney that are part of the Sydney Coastal Aboriginal Women's Group and beyond, it will mark our survival. It will mark our continued connection to country. It will be a moment that it's so permanent that we will never be able to be erased from the city, which, you know, that has been our experience as urban Aboriginal people who have a traditional connection to Sydney. As Paul Irish wrote so beautifully in his book, Hidden in Plain View, we have been here the whole time, but, you know, we have never been seen. So for us, this is a major work about our permanence, our connection, our survival, our resilience, our power in Sydney today. And I think for the people who live and work in Sydney, and I think that goes beyond just Aboriginal people, it'll be a great source of pride, because I don't think you'll be able to see Sydney in the same way ever again. It'll suddenly have a different perspective. This is really about our latent spirituality that's now manifested in bronze. This is about the rising and the resurrection of our culture, which we hope will, we know it's always been there, but it'll be something that we want to share, and a great source of pride. And I think, you know, for people who come from overseas, I think they might even connect it to Black Lives Matter. They might even sort of see it as a celebration of women in general. And I love that. I think it would be really great if this work was rising above any sort of dialogue about gender or race, but it's just a moment of celebration of women and their connection to nature. And, you know, some people might even see her as Mother Nature, and that's okay with me.
So this work, it's been announced now. When is it going to be unveiled, and how did this commission come about?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because, like, I think a lot of people think all of these art commissions, they come from the government. They don't. This artwork is part of the development of what they're calling 1CQ, which is basically when you're going down George Street and the tram turns the corner to go around the corner there. All of that corner is being developed, and it's being developed by Lendlease. They are creating a 7-star hotel, the Waldorf Astoria, and some residential, you know, apartments and things like that there. So as part of these developments, the government put in place this regulation that a certain percentage of the development is to be spent on public art. Like, it's a tiny percentage. I don't exactly know what it is. As part of that, UAP, who are art fabricators and curators, they invite different artists to put in a submission in a competition. And so I was in a competition. This is probably going back about 18 months ago. That's how these art commissions kind of happen. And I was lucky enough to win it. I nearly fell over because it's the biggest commission of my career. But I took that immediately after the excitement wore off, this sense of cultural responsibility set in, and that's really where Rowena immediately started collaborating with me, and we started talking to the Sydney Coastal Women. So I do see it as a collective effort from all of us, and something that we will tell our grandchildren about, and something that I hope that certainly is going to be a lot of from. So it's not going to go away for thousands of years, I hope. So we've got a long way to go to realise this artwork. It's just been announced. Now all of the really hard work begins. We've got to go to one of the biggest foundries in the Southern Hemisphere, run by UAP, who were part of the commissioning process. They make some of the biggest artworks from around the world. So they're extremely experienced with works of this complexity and this scale. We've been working really hard behind the scenes to make sure that this woman is made in one piece. You know, the last thing you want is an image of an Aboriginal woman from the waist up, and, you know, there's all these sort of, like, dissection points around her skin. Like, that's not what we want. So it's actually been quite a process to create a construction and moulding process out of bronze that's going to give us a sculpture that can come down in one piece. So will arrive probably towards the end of 2026 on her back on a truck from Brisbane, and then she'll be put in place, and hopefully in the new year, 2027, so in 18 months' time, we will have this beautiful Bajgama Nunda Wuli Wuli Walla, Black Women Rising, will be welcome to country forever.
That'll be so exciting to see her finally take her place there at Circular Quay.
It's such an enormous source of pride. It's really hard to put it into words because it's so deeply cultural.
I want to thank you so much for coming on and yarning with us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That was Alison Page, Dharawal and Yuen artist, talking to us about Bajigama Nangda Wali Walla Walla, Black Woman Rising. This work will be a permanent public work found in Circular Quay sometime in 2026. You'll hear about it again. You're listening to NITV Radio. You're listening to NITV Radio. I'm Nairi Pakai. Garçon is a one-person show exploring black and brown boyhood and belonging through a coming-of-age story. Here to give us more insight into the upcoming production is Wani Towashara. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Wani, can you tell us all about you? Who are you and where's your mob from?
So my name is Wani Towashara. I am Mushi from the Bashi people of Walungu. We're located on the eastern side of the Democratic Republic of Congo alongside the Great Lakes. I am a water child, and I also have roots in Aotearoa, where I spent a majority of my formative years, as well as my adolescence. I'm an artist and sometime academic with a deep love for storytelling.
Can you share with us, what is this production, Garçon?
Garçon is a deeply personal one-person show that explores stolen boyhoods of young men growing up in marginalized communities. It's about the way to silence, the struggle to find your voice, and the journey from survival to speaking up. I guess it's an invitation to audiences to reflect on the complexities of growing up too fast in a world that often doesn't see you.
So you're currently now based in Melbourne, right? But your experiences growing up and the environments that you've been in over time influence your art making, because you do also photography, installations, and this performative work now. What key moments are you drawing on for Garçon?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess some of the key moments I draw on Garçon is growing up in a neighborhood where silence often meant survival, witnessing the struggle of family, friends, and the complex dance between hope and hardship. A lot of it is shaped by the memories of parks, basketball courts, and everyday battles that define boyhood for me in those spaces. The play also reflects the impact of institutions, schools, hospitals, police, and how they shape and sometimes fail the communities they're supposed to be serving. these moments for me are like the heartbeat of the show.
So Garçon is being presented by Darabin Speakeasy, performed down there at our Northcote Town Hall Art Centre. How are you bringing what is described as lyrical storytelling to Garçon?
I was raised by some of the most amazing auntie storytellers. I also have a background in spoken word poetry, so a lot of the way I write and perform is influenced by this rather than traditional theatre. I love how spoken word can often reach emotional spaces that would otherwise be much harder to access with ordinary language, especially within a setting like this. I try to weave as much of it as I can within the show. And for me, it's not just about telling a story. It's about evoking a feeling, a place, like a moment in time.
So Garçon is a one-person show, but have you been alone in the art-making process? What does creative making look like for you?
I guess while Garçon is a one-person show on stage, the creative process has been anything but solitary. It's been a journey of collaboration with friends, mentors, directors, set designers, and the community. It's been like a collaborative process working to shape the story and the performance over, I'd say, about 5 years now. And through it, I spend a lot of time reflecting, writing, and experimenting with how to bring these memories into life in a way that's both mindful, but also true to myself and authentic to the story. There's a lot of deep listening involved, especially listening to silences between words. So it's definitely a process of discovery, vulnerability, and I'll say constant learning. And there's a story about a friend of mine who I feel is a really good reflection of the kind of neighborhood or community I grew up around, who ironically is first my bully and then we become good friends. And that kind of like, I suppose, not necessarily give and take, but that idea that like people are complex and it's not as simple as being like black and white or this or that, but people can evolve and change and grow, and they exist in like a lot of different complexities. And I feel like for me, that's also a reflection of the neighborhood and environments we found ourselves in. They're not necessarily always like as black and white as they appear, but a lot of shades of gray. Something I think I definitely want to highlight, and one of my aspirations and hopes for Garçon, is that like people are able to come in, specifically, like, you know, hopefully black and brown folks who don't often get to see their own stories told, and not necessarily as like another representative story, but just to feel that like regardless of what that story is, it's valuable and it's important and it's okay that it's told. And even though this is like a personal story to me because it's an aspect of my life, having the courage to dig deeply into it, that's like hopefully something that could be seen as like brave and inspiring, I suppose. That's something I'd love.
A lot of people, they don't just find themselves in the arts. Can you tell us what your journey has looked like to come into performance work?
Absolutely. My journey has been, I think to say unique is a bit of an understatement. I'm originally an athlete, so completely different background, and moved here from Aotearoa, and I was fortunate enough to meet somebody who introduced me to spoken word poetry. I was working at a shoe store at the time, and just seeing words used in that way and the way I felt like they were able to penetrate, like, emotionally, really stirred something in me. And I got curious. I got curious how it is people manage to find the courage to stand up there. I got curious about like finding ways to tell stories and whether what I had to say was important and the different ways that I could say it. And at the time, I was incredibly, incredibly shy and didn't like public attention in that way. So to see someone get up there and be as brave as some of those people were really inspired me to want to explore. And it went from that to realizing that I have a deep passion for storytelling that doesn't always just manifest as spoken word. And Melbourne, I feel like, gave me the base to be able to explore these other avenues. And I've been fortunate enough to, I guess, be successful in some of those ways. But success for me doesn't always sound or feel like success in other people's eyes. Because success for me is doing something that I feel like my friends, my family can come to and enjoy and have a good time. It doesn't always necessarily look like the traditional means of what we're told success is supposed to look like. So that also was really important to me because I wanted to make sure, regardless of what I did, that I was being true to myself and being authentic and, yeah, how I got out my voice. I also found, like, art a really good space to grow. I feel like some of the artworks I make feel like timestamps to me of where I was at a particular time. And I find that really cool to be able to, like, explore and look at and see how much you've grown or where perhaps you still need growing. So, yeah, that's been my journey.
So for anyone who is seeking out more information or want to see Garçon or any upcoming works from you, where can they go to find it?
The best place to find me is probably on social media, on my Instagram, so at Juanita Ashara. But information is also available through Darabin. If you search up Darabin Speakeasy, Ben Garçon, or just type in my name, it should come up. And of course, you could always catch me at live performances like this around Melbourne or around other creative art spaces and just say what's up.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Juanita Ashara speaking with NITV Radio about his one-person show, Garçon. Garçon will be at the Northcote Town Hall Arts Centre from the 16th to the 20th of July. Tickets can be found at the Darabin Arts website. You've been listening to NITV Radio.